Yeah, welcome everybody to Schirn Kunsthalle on our first occasion event in connection to our exhibition, Carol Walker, A Black Hole is All a Star Longs to Be. And I can tell you now, you can put off your masks. And there are also some chairs free over there, so you don't have to stand. You can still move over there. And yeah, so get started. So we are very happy to welcome you here to the first event of a several coming up exhibition events in connection with our exhibition that you will find also in our flyer that we put onto your chairs. And we are very looking forward to seeing you there on these occasions again, hopefully also so many of you. And I'm very, very happy now to have this evening, and I'm very grateful and happy for Carol Walker that she not only came to the installation to help us here, she stayed to the opening, and after one day off, she also stayed for the artist talks. I'm very, very grateful that you came here and stayed here. And of course, I'm very happy to welcome Yasmil Raymond. I shortly introduce Cara. I think I don't have to do it in length. But maybe some of you have seen the exhibition above. After the talk, there's not the possibility to go upstairs, but there are a lot of weeks to go that you can see the exhibition, and maybe some of you have been upstairs just before. Maybe some of you have seen her work presented in 2001 in a group show here at Schirn, which was called The Memory of Art. And there she was exhibited with one of her, how we can say it, trademark works with a silhouette, a huge panoramic cutout silhouette. And now we have her here with a sort of different exhibition. Some of you have seen it, with an exhibition of around 650 works on paper. But we go to that later on. She was exhibited in Germany on several other exhibitions and occasions, but I'm not going to bore you with all those information and go strictly to Yasmil Raymond, who came to Frankfurt only in 2019 and is the director of Städelschule, and by the way, the first female director in its 200-year history. Yay! Yasmil worked at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Chicago, the Museum of Modern Art in New York, and also the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis. And there, she was a co-curator of the so far first and only retrospective of Carol Walker in 2007. Carol Walker, My Compliment, My Enemy, My Oppressor, My Lover. And that has traveled to several other cities, not only in America, but also came to Europe. And so I was so happy to see in one of the catalogs Yasmil's name, and then just thought, oh, I just have to go over the mine, and then I have a person who knows Carol Walker, who knows her work. I have somebody to talk about it, because, as I said before in the press conference, there were a lot of questions to me and the need to talk. And so I was very happy to have her over the river and to visit her and talk about the works. And so I'm also very happy that she was willing directly in to have this artist talk. So to step directly into the talk, my first question goes directly to Yasmil. And as you know, Cara's worked for so long. What did you first think when you came upstairs here in the exhibition?
Okay, we didn't rehearse that.
First impressions.
Okay, first impression. Well, I was happy to see the work in Europe. Not that we hadn't seen it in Paris already in 2007, but somehow it felt so long ago, 2007. And many things have changed here as well. So it spoke to the moment and the need we have right now and always to discuss art and the truths that art gives us. So I was delighted to see that here and people looking at the work. So that was my first immediate impression. Obviously, none of these I've seen. This is Kara's archive. And an archive is a house. So it's quite private. And even though I feel I've seen a lot of your work for some great amount of time, I never seen any of the works that are here. So that's a discovery and big education for me. The films I had seen, but obviously I'm talking about the works on paper and the archival material. It reminded me, before I left New York, I had the experience of studying your sketchbooks at the gallery at Tsukema Jenkins. And none of that material was here, and therefore all of these was double new and incredible.
That's a whole other archive, apparently, that exists.
Yeah. 75 sketchbooks.
Yeah. I think also the exhibition that you both worked together on in 2007, a retrospective, is also, I mean, you were 38 at that time. That was also a very special format for an exhibition. Mm-hmm. And here, this was also sort of my question, like, also this is a very special format, as you already pointed out. You open up your archive, make the selection of the works, which is also a very special format. So how was it for you? Or could you?
I think, yeah, I mean, I'm just sort of jumping in because I feel like, yeah, that there's a constant sort of self-exploration and, you know, if it's archive or if it's just kind of memorabilia or personal nostalgia or diary opening or self-revelation, there is a kind of a way that, you know, whether it's an official retrospective or an exhibition of drawings in this format or the upcoming format in the gallery or all of the drawings that I've been doing that I have shown, there's always the quality of them being a kind of a record of a particular moment, whether it's a week, a month, you know, several years or a couple of decades in this case. So I think the sort of historicizing approach, self-historicizing approach is a little bit a part of my you know, model.
Mm. The method. Mm-hmm. I also thought that what is intriguing, and I'm still trying to understand why I will say this, but it's an exhibition that it's very generous in that it gives a prelude or an introduction to the audience, to the visitors. And it almost, I left thinking like, tan, 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 tan. When the next show comes, everybody now has a background.
Yeah. I know, it's almost like I have no more explaining to do. Now I can
hopefully
get to the work or something.
Hopefully.
Finish.
I had that feeling. And because last time we saw each other was in London at the opening of the Tate.
Yeah.
And it was the next day I came to Frankfurt. And I was thinking about how that major work, 13-meter high fountain, was just piggybacking a bunch of other huge works that you had been in the last 5 years invested in New Orleans. We went to see the Catastrophe Caravan in 2017, then I wrote down, before that we met in Cleveland for your large show of drawings, The Ecstasy of Santa Clara, and then just before that you did The Subtlety in Brooklyn. So that was in a period of 5 years. Mm. So this exhibition has this feeling of like
exhaustion. No.
No, like recovering and reassessing.
Definitely that, I think. Definitely that. I think when I explained another place, but it, you know, when I was approached to do a show about of my drawings, and I thought, well, you know, I'm always kind of moved and, you know, moved to make drawings. I should be doing, you know, I have a lot of internal mechanisms that are all about, you know, working and starting work, and drawing is sort of fundamental to that. It's the, you know, the bread and butter, the basic. Another part of me, you know, I had just, I think, completed or was in the midst of working on the large commission for the Tate, and I thought, I actually have drawn. I do draw, and I have drawn. You know, I started making a bunch of new work, and then I was like, but there is work, you know, and it just sort of coincided with a kind of a shuffling around project in the studio. Like, I actually had to move some boxes, and I was like, what is in all the boxes? You know, like, what can be got rid of, and what, you know, I mean, what childhood things are lurking, you know, that my parents sent after many years. And I was like, okay, so I start going through, and of course, on top of everything are just drawings that got shelved, things that I have sort of identifiable markers, like 2008, you know, and like sort of like a particular bad moment, you know, and I was like, and the diary is there, you know, in these drawings, and the way that the drawings came out of me and my dissatisfaction or my, you know, neurosis around them has been living in this box. And it seemed important to take them out and let them, you know, speak. I couldn't throw them away, or, you know, it's a little bit of a therapeutic process, like accepting them as drawings, accepting that these histories are my histories, have happened, and, you know, what has happened in relation to them and beyond them.
Yeah, and I'm grateful that you didn't throw them away. I mean, I always think when we went to art school, when I went to art school, we will get these 15 rules of John Cage, and I think one of them is don't throw anything away. Oh. So you're
It wasn't
you're
the
okay.
Kill Your Darlings one, that's a different one. The one that says throw it away.
Exactly, don't throw it away. No, and so, yeah. Wow, I was trying to go back a little bit this morning and feeling that it's unfair to sit here without acknowledging some people. Somehow, I feel like a great need after these serious past 2 years. People we lost, Maurice Berger, who wrote in your catalog, who's not here anymore, and who was so important when I was studying art as well, in my time with his writings on race and art. But also because I saw your first work at the Renaissance Society in Chicago in 1997. I was only 20 years old, baby. And Hamza Walker made such an important contribution by showing that work, your big show there at the Ren. And so I'm thinking of Hamza, but I'm also thinking of the curator of the retrospective that invited me to join the team, Philippe Verne, who allowed me to piggyback and, as a very young curator, to be part of this book and to be part of the tour. And so power, which is all we're going to be really dealing when we see your work, we're really dealing with power relationships and the subtleties of power and the abuses of power. But power also comes with empowering. Mm-hmm. Because this empowering and empowering are as difficult.
Yeah.
So I was empowered by Philippe and by Richard Flood and Unji Ju.
All our friends.
And then I was double empowered by the writers of your work early on, who were incredible, like your cousin James. Hanahan, Kevin Young. And I was even remembering Leila Lee, the artist, and how a conversation with her at the Walker was so important back then. In Hilton Halls. I was in Paris.
Oh, yeah. Hilton was in Paris holding forth. If you don't know Hilton Halls and his writing, look it up.
No, I think it's a good moment to be with this material and to be looking at your drawings and thinking with them. And there will be a publication coming up by MIT Press of writings on your work. I don't know if
I don't know about that.
If you heard that. Oh, yeah. There's, you know those little books, October Files? Mm-hmm. You're getting one of those.
Okay.
From our historian who's French, who saw the retrospective when she was studying, Hanina Here.
I guess I do know about
that. You'll get a copy.
So she's been working on that for a while.
But I think these things are important because, oftentimes we get so caught up in how are people receiving the work. And I always wanted to ask you, how do you do these to put down, shut down those voices?
Mm. Well, I don't.
You don't?
Unfortunately. I mean, the reality is, it's a kind of an argument, constant argument with a lot of different voices. You know, there's different gatekeepers at work, past and present, who, and some are in the art world. I mean, clearly some said I couldn't say what I was saying early on, but I don't feel like I was particularly defiant in the traditional sense. I just have a kind of a train that's chugging along in me that must sort of be true to some, or to the best of my ability, right? And so there's, you know, there's sometimes a kind of a ghost of the abstract modernists like or some kind of like conceptual landscape who despises figuration, you know, and then sometimes there's the ghosts of, you know, the Black Arts Movement or the Harlem Renaissance or the, you know, the that sort of murky era before the Harlem Renaissance we were talking about. Oh no, I'm blanking on his name right now. Very important African-American artist from the turn of the century, studied with Eakins.
Aaron Young? Jacob Lawrence?
No.
Before them.
No, like the 1890s. Sorry, it'll come.
Put us on the spot.
I know I put everybody on the spot. Well, I was talking about him yesterday, so I know that I know his name. It's just, no, I don't have my phone to give everyone the lesson. But anyway, just thinking about these different legacies of art and the struggles in a way that every generation of, I mean, and really I can say African American artists because I'm not entirely sure about the rest of, you know, the sort of diasporic world as it encounters modernism and, you know, the sort of art project that was at work concurrently. But I think, okay, so he's making work and it's deemed too sentimental, and, you know, and then others are making work later on that's, you know, trying to, you know, think about African forms, but to, you know, have it be palatable to a moneyed white audience, perhaps, or a benefactory audience. And so there's all these kind of characters and histories that sort of are at work in front of that blank piece of paper. And some of them show up in the work as cartoons, telling me I shouldn't be doing this. Sometimes it's me getting back at them. Sometimes it's, you know, and it's not just, of course, art. It's, you know, events and histories and, you know, racists and people who have said terrible or done things or experiences that I've had or experiences that I was participant to. And so there's also the reckoning with these others and myself and those memories. And I think being able to sort of live in the discomfort of your own memory or self is part of the drawing process, and I feel sometimes really cursed, and other times less than cursed, but to you know, have this tool as a kind of it's a tool. It's like one of the first pieces of the toolkit. Like the other work, the film, or even these kind of bigger pieces, the monuments or the cut paper work, the sort of work that feels like final work, it feels more, right now it feels more rare, but it also feels half of it. It's not the whole of what I'm after.
Yeah, and I feel, if I follow what you're saying, you put a lot of your skin in the drawing. Yeah. You know, like, it's a lot there in the game.
And each one of them, and I don't always know where they're going to wind up, and sometimes there's the process of, it's like, is it an image, is it a blot, is it an action, is it a word, is it a phrase, is it a, am I effective, is it pretty, you know.
And that's what it gets closer to writing, which is something also that you do often.
Yeah.
And it's so powerful then, and so full of energy. And I remember thinking early on when I first saw your work, like what shocked me and what surprised me and validated so many things for me at that time and still today, if it carries the same emotion, is that it was on paper. Mm-hmm. He were this major work on paper, and it was figurative and monochromatic, and was doing all of these to capture the present. And that had been, for me, in my little upbringing, sort of something that was historical paintings territory. And I remember thinking, wow, who is that? And how did she get to do these? And still today, it is really the power, very one of the things that keeps speaking to me about how you injected paper with the same values of painting.
Values of painting, that's a whole other situation.
Maybe the force of painting.
The force of painting. I think the power of paper is like that it doesn't count somehow. It's like it's the ground. It's not the... it's not the image, but I think I wanted to make work that sort of occupies that in-between space between the second class and the insignificant sort of, and the grand, history painting, and the sort of with all of the trappings that come with it, the hubris and the sort of moxie and the, to just like stand in that space and say it's mine. And
well, in the case of also the silhouette, that they have to be removed.
Yeah. Right. Well, yes, but also they were extremely temporary, very fragile. You can take them down. They fall off the wall. They can be my initial silhouette piece at the drawing center was 50 feet long, and I made it on site because I didn't have a 50 foot wall. And I didn't know what was going to happen to it afterwards, but I thought, well, it's just paper. So, at the end, I took it all down, rolled it up, and put it in the attic for a little while. And then, it actually had the possibility to sort of be reinstalled, and sort of reconstituted in some way. But I sort of like the... Because I think also image-wise and the sort of like narrative territory that I entered into with the sort of like, this is a panorama of ye old South, and I'm the little humble negress who's going to tell you all about it, was really, is possibly really, really provocative and surprising to people in a way that I could not have thoroughly anticipated. Being sort of a jokester myself, so it made sense to me to say, this is this version of history that's been sort of exported around the world, the old South with the Southern Belles and the happy slaves, and there's all these dark, horrid undercurrents, and isn't it funny that I'm the black artist and this is all you want me to talk about is like the old, black struggle. And so I sort of did all of those things at the same time, and then I said, but it doesn't, but it's also everything that I've given you is a myth, and it's no longer here, the wall is, it's all destroyed. It's not, but it's
Because how was it when you were studying? Were people saying to you, why are you not painting self-portraits a la Frida Kahlo, let's say?
Depends. In undergrad, I was in Atlanta, and there was a lot of, there was definitely a disconnect, definitely a racial divide in my school. Mm-hmm. So you had, sort of a contingent of black students who were really saying, we're going to make work that's really addressing, black issues. And I grew up around that to some extent already. And then I had white teachers who said, your work's not black enough. And I said, well, I'm just like skirting the line, thinking about mythology, thinking about the body, thinking about death, thinking about, aging, thinking about decay, I was sort of in that mode. And eventually when I started thinking about, what is race and what are these ideas on that are attached to my body as a woman and as a black woman and as a person living in the South, and what are these mythologies that I've come to, ingest and inhabit and maybe live a little bit. I made it a part of my research, I made it a part of my writing, I made it a part of, anyway, I've said all this before, I'm repeating myself. I've said it in other places, I haven't said it here. Yeah.
No, but I think it needs to be said, because I think it's a condition that many female artists are faced with, to give testament,
mm-hmm. yeah.
to what it is to be in this body. And especially women of color artists, yeah. female artists.
And that is the legacy. And if you mm-hmm. look for models historically, slave narratives that are bound up, especially by, women, and also, obviously Frederick Douglass is the most worldwide famous of them, but Incidents in the Life of a Slave Girl is the narrative that kind of binds all these things together, where there's a life that happens that's unseen even by the narrator. She can't even complete her text because there's an audience that could not handle the truth. Mm-hmm. But it, again, first person testimonial, more or less.
And I was reminded of something you once said, that you have no interest in making a work that doesn't elicit a feeling. Mm. And I guess that's also how many of us approach art. Like, we go to art to elicit feelings and thoughts and responses. And around you grew up in a household with a father who's a painter.
Yes.
Mary Walker.
Yes.
And so you had a first-hand experience of the making art, not necessarily people get the point.
That people don't get the point? No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting when the segue between feeling and father was really interesting because of some of the issues that are in some of one of the groups of work, which is a lot about father and relationship to, fathers, but of all stripes. But yeah, there's something about the weird thing about that situation, really having a painter for a father, is that, everything was permitted in some limited form. The limited form was that, you could make art. Mm-hmm. And then if you have a bunch of feelings that you don't know what to do with, you don't have to talk about them or address them one-on-one to other people. You just make an artwork. Just dump it all in there. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess that's what we do then. This is, and so in a way, there's a kind of, when I was studying, there are these moments, especially in this show, I have these moments of revelation where I'm like, oh, it's because I grew up in a Victorian household, it's because everything has to be sublimated. And so I have these kinds of, moments where I'm like, oh, that's why this looks so familiar to me, or that's why I'm so drawn to this kind of patina of another
secret
era,
messages.
Secret messages, and yes, and fainting spells.
Yeah, well, I thought that that of not getting the point of why we make, why some artists, why artists make art. It's a little bit something in my mind because, well, now I'm involved in art education, and I am sympathetic and empathetic to the struggle of artists being their work received and people dismissing
right
what is there.
Yeah.
Or wanting to read else, something else in it.
Yeah. I think that's really, it's really kind of important sometimes when you see, I'm trying to think of a really, like, what's the most outrageous, like, artwork that we talk about sometimes, you know, like, historically. It seems like a lot of it comes from Germany. but, like, you know, to have this kind of, like, sense of, I mean, I feel like, you know, as a student, especially as a graduate student, I really wanted to look out there and have some kind of an example, or at least, it's not so much to be a pedagogical example, but just like, there's got to be somebody out there who's like doing like all the outrageous shit that, you know, European artists seem to, like the Western model of art, modern art history is like, based on, and I was like, doing, you know, they're out there shitting in cans and, you know, jumping out of windows, just like, you know, and getting the attention for it. And so where's, you know, where are my black heroes, like, feel, why are the, all these limits placed on our bodies as far as, like, what we're allowed to say and what we're not allowed to say and what, and who's the gatekeepers and all of that. And of course, there's lots of them, as I yeah. stated earlier, there's a whole yeah. lot of them. Ancestors, you know, the ancestors, capital A, and then all the rest. But I think it's so vital somehow to be able to at least feel like, well, what are at least the, what's the range, you know, and then at least always have drawing as the touchstone so that when I feel like I've gone to the edge of my own known universe, I can sort of
come back.
Oh,
it's super important, this idea of the ancestors, because I remember when writing about your work, I also had to go to some people to understand, and someone that came up was Adrian Piper. And the silencing, I feel that Adrian's work has suffered for a period of time, until recently with the retrospective at MoMA. But still that show, for example, did not come to Europe.
No.
And that's a great pity because she pays taxes in Berlin and in Germany. And I think she should be granted a big show here. Yeah. It's a condition, yeah. You know, Joan Didion said it so nicely. She says, like, writers are, yeah, like, or artists are people who tell you their dreams and their nightmares, but sometimes people don't want to hear them.
Yeah, but then sometimes people want to hear them too well, and then it's like a whole other crazy situation. Tell me more of your nightmares.
Yeah.
Tell me more of your goop.
And you spoke other times about how you sit down and you engage in loose, quick drawings to get in touch of where you are, grounded, to then begin a work. And I felt a lot of, it's hard to think of the work upstairs as quick, but okay.
Yeah.
You have special breakfast. But these are documents too, and have information, they carry certain information.
Talk to us
about that process.
I mean, I think a lot of the work, groups of work on the walls, I mean, it's kind of clear in their groupings that they kind of happened in one sitting. And I had an instruction a long time ago that I tried to keep as part of my practice, which is to do like 100 drawings. Like, you sit down and it's just like, and you just do them at once, like in one sitting. So that's the day. and you have your stack of paper, and it doesn't have to be good paper, and you know, and you just choose a tool to use, you know, pencil or ink or something, and then that's your project. And whatever happens is part of the process, right? So the first one is absolute shit, and then the 60th one is also complete garbage, and you should have gotten better by now. And then you keep going, and then like 75 is like pretty good. And then sometimes you just write, and you're like, oh, now I'm being lazy, and now I'm like, and then you go through this whole kind of psychological process that and it's interesting because you start you're riffing on things you saw in the paper and memories and what you're doing at there's the immediate tangible breakfast item, and then there's the sort of imaginary the thoughts that are there, and so and what you give yourself permission to, right? Like, what is am I allowed to just draw the apple in front of me also in this process, or does it have to be a figure? Does it have to be a figure that does this one have to be about the issues that I'm known to make work about? Can it be a face? Can it not be a face? Can it be a shape? What is a shape? So all those questions come to bear, and it's in all these groupings of work. And so sometimes it looks like this disjointed mess of associations or dissociations, and other times it's, if you have, especially right now with the what do you call that, objective distance, I could see how it comes together, all those disjointed bits, and I could probably talk you through them, but it wouldn't be as interesting as just looking at the weird, why this, is this paper fading?
Or like those ink blobs upstairs that you see, that you put ink and then you found the
image. Sometimes you find an image, and sometimes you don't, and sometimes the blot is the blot. Sometimes the blot is meant to carries a certain weight, and that weight is, it's like the black hole, and it is like I don't have language anymore, but the body that's not allowed, the body that's not allowed in the space, the black body in this space of this paper, it is, a kind of a blot on the landscape, a mark, a presence, an entity, no less valuable than the drawn image. And so there's this conversation.
Yeah, I was so surprised. I had obviously seen great amount of your work, but I was so surprised with all these papers, different papers this time, and I was like, did she go to Japan? Where did she get this?
I actually
ink?
Did go to Japan.
Ink? Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a little fetishizing sometimes, but I think that's the art school portion that gets in the way sometimes of the art. Like a little bit, there are moments where it's like, yeah, I know I don't want to make paintings, but I just want to go to the store with the fancy, pigments and, mix, I just want to mix, a little pigment, and then I'm going to use that, but I don't want that to be the focus. I just want, so there's a little, especially the big group that's called Pater Gavidam, the pregnant father piece, that has all the different colored papers and, the ink and all the, art historical touches.
Yeah. And then there's the laughter in your writings. Mm-hmm. Often that's where the punch comes for me. And, it's hard because I know people are very serious here. Mm-hmm. And in the audience, I went a couple times to see the show, and I know that you should not laugh because people look at you like, what's wrong with you? You're not supposed to be laughing in Kara Walker's work. But then I said, well, I can't because I know enough to be laughing. But I do the same thing,
but not when anybody's present. But I'm always kind of, especially just installing the show. And there are these moments where, I'm a little bit like, there are a couple things where I'm just like, I'm not big on self-censorship, but there's like one or two, and I'm just like, you know what? Not here, not now. And they're still there. They're just slightly on the scrolls, especially because the scrolls are really automatic writing, you know, like automatic cartooning, drawing. There's some moments where I tried to slow myself down by typing and then gluing the typed words, but it was still, the typewriter was right next to me while I was doing it, so there was not that much slowing down. But there are just those moments where I was just like, okay, so you're really thinking about like the extremities of like an art practice, and like, yeah. So maybe we'll just put a piece of paper over, just another drawing on top of that. But there are moments that really make me giggle, and maliciously sometimes. But and I don't know what to do with it, because it's like, oh, there's the you know, there's a man saying, you know, she eats the soul, you know, like, and he's I thought he was kind of a sugar daddy, and he's got piles of money behind him, but it's very loosely sketched out. She eats the soul, and the black woman behind him says, "It's true, I do," and I think it's funny.
I know, it's so hard, because the thing with laughter and humor, it's really hard.
Yeah, and I think there is something about making people feel and then making them uncomfortable about feeling in the space of with other people. Mm-hmm. And then, like, because I think that has really elicited, you know, commentary, I mean, in gallery situations, particularly in the States. I don't know about here yet, but, you know, like, shh, you know.
That's right. I can see it coming. Yeah, so no, I think that's there, and it's intentional, and so the other night we had a great opening, I thought.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, and we had three young female artists who were writers, artists, writers, performers. Octavia Burgo, who's here. Olamuji Fahemezi.
Olamuji.
Fahemezi.
Jemisi.
And Aria Dean. Yeah. And I left floored.
Yeah.
And inspired and optimistic and felt like finally there's a new level and a new generation.
Yeah.
And I felt so happy that it was at your opening, because this could have happened elsewhere, but that it was at your opening, it was like Augustus. Mm-hmm. We were in a Roman dinner and that Horace came and gave poetry or something. And I just thought, like, wow, there was something very Roman about it.
Yeah.
And yeah, do you see that too? I mean, I see it with my young artists at the Theaterschule, but
this was special. It was somewhat calculated, intentional. Yes, I won't put anybody on the spot. But, you know, I thought, and this was also partly because of a conversation that Katarina and I had early on about bringing the show here. She remembered, and apparently I publicly complained about something, but from my 2000 experience at the Schoen, which had a lot of speeches for a very long time, and I didn't understand, and I've been to other openings, particularly in Europe and in Germany, where there's a lot of speeches and dissertations, and I thought, I really need this to be different in some way or form. I need for this to be active, or to sort of activate the space in a sort of metaphysical and intellectual and soulful and surprising way. So like female energy, you know, but not the ones that you're thinking of, you know. Just like, really, I want people who are thinking about my work in this way that's not about my work, you know, or about their, but about the work, you know. So it was a little bit witchy even, but not in that way that you think, you know. And so, you know, I asked and received a wonderful, and DJ Mariama, Money Mama, was also a part of that mix. So we had, you know, we had our readers and we had our DJ, and the DJ really helped activate the room, right, in a way that I think people were really hungry for, especially coming through the pandemic and COVID and everything. So I think there was something really important to sort of maybe even offset some of the sort of what I think of the existential horror of the black hole that is my show, which is like it can draw you in and draw you down, and this can like release you into your body and into society and into company for a little while.
I
think it worked really very nicely,
delighted.
And I was very pleased.
Yeah.
Indeed. I felt like I said, I mean, I had to go back on Instagram just to say I was a proud mama of, you know, because I feel like, you know, we always want to know that there's, you know.
Instagram.
I did, but I applied it universally, but also very specifically. Yeah.
I think that was indeed a very surprising evening. I don't know who was there for the opening here sitting in the artist talk, not so many, but
yeah, sure.
But I think also, I mean, it was very difficult, I think, for our audience, mm-hmm. but most of the, I mean, for those who weren't there, we had like three fantastic young women.
Right, there was
presenting, performing.
Performing works that were about, I think Olamiji was speaking, I don't know, I shouldn't paraphrase her, but she used the quadruple consciousness.
And we learned that.
A quote about Nina Simone and sort of thinking about her performance of self and... Aria Dean gave a very fascinating and very rapid fire kind of what's the word in philosophy? Exposition? Yes. on Medusa, mm-hmm. and Perseus.
Yep.
Yes. And and the
Hal Foster
and the Black Medusa. She said maybe that sounds wrong. When it was just an overall wonderful, surprising, and Octavia, of course.
Poetry.
It was poetry, and
the body,
and, it was,
and the receiving of these images or of images of art.
Love.
Another artist.
Yeah, no, it was brilliant, and
being loved.
I think it puts us in the right place because for some time now, right, we've been thinking, wow, where is this going? Where are we going? Mm-hmm. And yeah. I thought, oh, we'll just learn in Frankfurt. Where are we going?
Yeah.
You saw it here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super great. How to close? How to
say more things?
Yeah. No, I want to maybe be a little provocative. Not badly, but not with bad intentions. Just in general, because right, the only critique I have so far is an institutional critique, because there's a signage before your show. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I have to do it because that's what I don't get paid, so I can talk whatever I want.
You are getting paid.
Okay, I'm on the road.
Oh, no. So then I don't say it.
Don't say a thing.
I'll take it back. It's perfect.
You have to talk about it.
No,
funny.
There's a little sign but so because I used to work in museums and I still have that thing about like, no, it has to come from the bottom to the top, right? So when we warn the visitor in advance, it's like double insulting to the visitor because I feel that you're disempowering them rather than empowering them. It comes from this kind of strange place of protecting people, but art is that thing that is, it must generate a certain discomfort in order to trigger.
Yeah, I think the thing, actually, when you say protecting, my immediate response is that the art is protecting.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it's the thing that is least likely to harm you, in fact. It's
in real thoughts. Harm.
Real harm.
Real
I mean,
harm.
Physical harm. And,
yeah.
I mean, in, you know, of course, yeah, if it's art and it's doing its best work, then it should, you know.
Yeah, so it's hard. I worked in museums, and so I know that where this conversation comes from, or its intention, the good intention of protecting with the hypersensitivities of the complaint that one must endure for showing work. But it's crucial that we don't fall into these patterns. It sends the wrong message to artists who are young or older, who are coming into the exhibition. And it also definitely sends the wrong message to the audience, that they don't have a power to understand these. And so I think it's to insist and affirm the role of artists and the respect we have for artists and what they do, we must not put those signs.
That's very interesting. I remember when my daughter was, how old? 8? When the Walker Art Center show opened, and the first thing we walked into was a sign that said people with small children should be advised about the content of the material. And I said, do you see this?
Yeah.
That's all I can say. I don't know what else. But I feel like, you know, a lot of times people have, especially with the silhouette work, because it's very readable, you know, legible. People say, well, what about the children? What are the children? So, well, children are pretty bright.
Yeah. You know,
children are smart, and they see things, and they say, oh, that person's hurting that person, or that, you know, they feel it, and they say it, and then they make their parents uncomfortable, and then that's where the trigger warning thing happens, because the parents are like, I don't know what I'm supposed to say back, you know? And then the best thing is to just say, uh-huh, you're right, you're very perceptive, and, you know, I think the artist was meaning to talk about that.
Yeah.
Period. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and if they want to investigate further, if kids are interested, then they will. But I think to get really labored about stuff is where you really shut down things for sensitive groups, you know, or kids, you know, in particular.
Yeah, nonetheless, I commend very much the effort of bringing the exhibition and here and bringing it together by the Kunstmuseum Basel and the work of Joseph Helfenstein and Anita Haldenmann and here our beloved Katerina Dohm. And it's obviously a good thing for us, and we are honored and grateful that it happened. So it is the art of art, right? That's what we are in. That's what we want.
I guess.
So art to do its thing.
Art to make its magic. No, not magic. Nah. Make its art.
Make its art.
Yeah, to make its thing.
And so what's next? What's coming up? You go home? What, or you go
home
on holiday?
And I open a show. Well, the next thing is a smallest show at the Sycamore Jenkins Gallery in New York. That's new. I've been, since 2020, drawing and made a lot of drawings. And so there's a group of drawings that keeps getting longer under the title, under the rubric, The Book of Hours. So I'll take a selection of those. And then I have a film, a little animation, like an 11-minute animation that I made pretty much earlier this year that kind of chronicles, you know, white supremacy and several short acts, white supremacy from the 90s through now, or through the 1890s through now. In 11 minutes. And that,
in 11 minutes?
Yeah. it was just too much. I mean, frankly, that was really the issue. It was just like, I'm just to key moments, and you can fill in the rest. The audience has to do some of the work for me. So that's the next, you know, end of the month.
Oh, wow.
And then the show goes on.
Okay.
And then there's other things in the future I can't quite talk about, right? Mm. Because they don't exist. they're venues without, you know.
Well, you know, you have an open invitation whenever you want to come to Frankfurt.
Okay.
And
thank you.
Please.
Do a little visiting artist.
You name it.
Okay.
You name it. If you ever need shelter, Städteschule, we have space there.
Okay. go back to school? Can I finish up my painting degree finally?
I'm sure some people will give you space in some studio. Just have to be nice.
All right.
Good.
All right, I think that's a good ending, I think, to a wonderful evening once more.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Kara.
For a wonderful opening, a beautiful installation. It's really, I think, well conceived.
Yeah.
And very well. Very thoughtfully conceived and very detailed. Thank you, Yasmin. It's great to see you again.
So great to see you.
So thank you for having you here as well. And good night.